Welcome to Slapshot Podcast, episode number 11, the first of 2020. Yes, 2019 is behind us. 2020 is here. The brand new decade has officially begun, and the podcast is returning after a little hiatus during the holidays. I hope you all spend time with your friends and family. I hope you had lots of time off. I hope you ate a bunch of food, as you should. And it's time to get back to the grind of whatever you do daily. It's time to get back to the fantasy hockey grind as well. I mean, if you're a degenerate like me, you probably played over the holidays. If anything, you tried to avoid your family to be able to play. No, I didn't do that. But yes, hockey is back. What better way to, the podcast is still going to be done on Wednesdays. I didn't do it on Wednesday because it was the first, but I figured I would do one on Friday. I decided earlier in the week, I was like, I'm going to do it on Friday. And the hockey gods have rewarded me by having a whole bunch of stuff happen over the last couple of hours, and we're going to talk about it today. We're going to talk about all the stuff that went down with the Ilya Kovalchuk signing. We're going to talk about as well the couple of trades that were made in the NHL last night, Thursday, for those of you, depending on whenever you're listening. First, we're going to start with John Tortorella and the debacle that is the NHL. And now, for those of you, you probably know already what's happened with all that. If you live under a rock, let me catch you up to speed. So John Tortorella was fined recently $20,000 because he absolutely ripped NHL officials. And I know a lot of times people are like, well, it's just Tortorella just blowing hot steam out of his mouth. And in this case, it wasn't, because John had every right to be pissed off. And it's kind of annoying that the NHL is who they are. The NHL is a joke at times. They prove to be a joke here. Let me catch you up to speed. So, in their game against the Chicago Blackhawks, in overtime, Blackhawks are called for too many men on the ice. For whatever reason, okay, the clock runs down about 1.1 seconds, okay, after the whistle. So naturally, you're saying, well, 1.1 second, who cares? Well, here's how unlucky the Columbus Blue Jackets are. It runs down, and now for whatever reason, the NHL officials did not add that 1.1 seconds back to the clock, right? Toronto didn't step in and say, hey, put some clock back. It ran down for no reason. Now, what do you think happened? Well, you already know. Zach Werenski scores. But time runs out on the clock. Now, this 1.1 seconds that magically disappeared would have been enough for them to win. But that doesn't happen. Now they go to a shootout. They lost the shootout. Shocking. But even worse, Jonas Korpisalo goes down due to injury after, I think it was the second shooter. He hurts himself. And now he's out 4 to 6 weeks after having surgery on a torn meniscus. So the chain of events here, I don't know who has a Columbus Blue Jackets voodoo doll, but they need to destroy it because this team can't stay healthy. They can't stay healthy. I mean, for this to happen the way that it did, like, man, you got to be unlucky. If you were a betting man on this situation happening, you'd be a multi-billionaire because you could not have predicted this. So the Blue Jackets now lose their top goalie. And the league says nothing. They don't, all they state, like, and then afterwards, right, if you listen to the interview, like, Torts absolutely ripped them. And he had every right to rip them. He had, this should have been corrected. What should have happened is the league should have stepped in and said, hey, no, or the referee should have gone back to check and say, okay, well, did it happen? The scorekeeper should have been like, okay, like, what happened here? None of this happens. None of this happens. And it's so cliche of the NHL to just not care. And that's what it is here. They do not care. They do not hold themselves accountable, and they do not hold referees accountable. And that, it's just, man, like I'm trying to find the words to it, because in other leagues, I strongly believe that NHL referees should be made media available. Players are obligated to be media available. Coaches are obligated to be media available. I don't know why NHL referees are not. Well, I mean, we know why, right? Because then they're going to get grilled on things that they've done wrong. And they should. If I'm not mistaken, and somebody will correct me, I think it's the NBA that makes their officials media available. But besides all this, right, he's fined $20,000. If I read this correctly, we already know how much he's going to be fined should he say something again. I think it's $25,000. So the league issues a statement. Colin Campbell comes out and says that John Tortorella's comments were unprofessional, okay, and unacceptable. And the only thing that's unprofessional is unacceptable is Colin Campbell and the NHL doing absolutely nothing in this entire shit show. Because they should have A, at least come out and say, hey, guess what? We screwed up. Because they did. There's video proof that you screwed up. Admit it. If you don't want to put your referees on the front line and say, why didn't you do this? Fine. Hide behind them and don't make them available and protect them in bubble wrap. Do that. It's fine. But you as a league need to come out and say, look, we made a mistake. You cannot change it now. Okay? The harm is already done. I mean, the odds of Columbus makes the playoffs are minimal. But let's say they do miss it by 1 point. Well, this game is going to come up. You cannot have a league that doesn't give a rat's ass about what's going on when they screw up. And they should have at least come out in their statement. Their statement basically comes out and says that what John Tortorella said was unacceptable. Yet they're, it's ironic that the league is saying that based on how unprofessional and unacceptable it was to not go back and check if they screwed up. Come out publicly and say, yeah, we did. That 1.1 second should have been put back on the clock. And this game should have had a different outcome maybe. They should have. And they don't. And they didn't. And that's dumb. And it frustrates me that this league just doesn't want to do anything when they screw up. I was watching, right? So I've been watching a lot of the World Juniors, okay? And I've noticed a lot of times referees, even when it comes to calling, right? I mean, if you watch the Canada game between Finland, foot gets called on a, like, not even a headshot. They don't go back to replay, right, to see the penalty because you can't do that. But all four referees gather up and they talk about it. The two head officials, the two linesmen, and they assess him a game misconduct and they throw him out. And in I think it was the Sweden-Czech Republic game, same thing, on a slashing call. They get together, all four of them, they talk about it, and they assess a five-minute major for slashing. And I'm sitting here going, man, like, double IHF referees are absolute trash. They are so not good. But they are consistent, though. They are consistent. They are consistently not good. You cannot fault them on that. It's black and white. They apply the letter. Doesn't matter if there's 10 seconds left in the game or you're just starting off. If they feel they need to throw you out of the game, they do it. And they don't care. And they consult about it first. And I'm sitting here going, man, why don't NHL referees do this? Why don't they get together at one point after a call and say, man, did you see something else I didn't see maybe? There's four of you on the ice. There's four zebras, okay? Two of you can call penalties. The other two are just making sure that, players are onside and that icings are well called. And, but why not get their opinion in this? Why don't you all sit down and say, hey, did you see something? Even if they probably did it, maybe one of them says, well, maybe we should check. No. None of this happens. Referees have a hard job. I understand that, okay? I get that. But you got to be, when you have resources around you to get the call right, use those resources. And if you in Toronto notice the same thing, then you got to do something. And when you screw up, because they did, the league screwed up. The league is responsible for what goes on the ice. You better damn well come out and say it and say, look, man, you were right. You want to fine him? Fine him, because that's the league rule. You talk bad about the officials, we fine you. All right. You can fine John Tortorella and say, hey, you cannot say those things. That being said, we were wrong too. Because John Tortorella came out the next day and said, you know, his PR speech there about how he overreacted and, you know, blah, 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 man. I would have doubled down. I would have already signed a $25,000 check for my next fine, shipped it to the league and said, here, man. Like, that's fine. That's how I would have done it. Probably not the best way to do it. I understand. John was the bigger person. But he was right. And that pisses me off. It pisses me off that the league doesn't get it right, and that they hide behind a stupid statement that doesn't say anywhere, we screwed up. That's all people want to hear is the league say, yeah, we're wrong. We're going to try to make sure this doesn't happen again. So, you know, do better, NHL. You suck. Colin Campbell, you suck. You're garbage. The league, it's a black eye again. There's so many instances of this happening where the league doesn't get it right. This was an easy way to get it right. They didn't do it. So good for you, Torts, for blowing your gasket. This time you own, you know, you didn't deserve it. You got screwed over. It cost you $20,000 to speak in the truth. Do better, NHL. Okay, now I feel better. Let me crack this open. Again, not a beer. Cream soda of choice today. I enjoy my soda. Oh, beautiful. Let me see. How good is this? Ah, just perfect. Not too cold, but just refreshing enough. Okay, now that we've gone past this Torts stuff in the NHL, let's take a look at what happened yesterday. So a couple of trades went down, and they involved some teams. Let's take a look at the first one. So the first one here is, at first I was like, hey, this makes sense. And I mean, it's kind of, not that it's grown on me, but it makes sense why Montreal does it. So they send Mike Riley to the Ottawa Senators for Andrew Sturz, I think so, and a fifth round draft pick. Now, in this case, Mike Riley hasn't really done much. I think he's played like 14 games for the team this year. He's got $1.5 million on the books for this season and next season. So Montreal's basically looking to move a player out. Ottawa can always acquire players. They need all the help they can get. So good. Maybe Mike Riley's going to welcome the change here. He wasn't getting a chance by Montreal. Montreal moves $1.5 million off the books so that Marc Bergevin can keep adding to the cap space that he refuses to use. Fine. And then we see why all this kind of happens here, okay? Because right afterwards, Montreal, now they need to make room on the books. So they go and they acquire... from the Buffalo Sabres, they acquire Marco Scandella. Now, it's no secret that there's too many defensemen in Buffalo, and they're still not a good team, and some of these defensemen want out. So Marco Scandella seems like a pretty easy one. Montreal guy coming back home, makes sense. He's got $4 million on the book this year. Next year is a UFA. So this makes sense. Now, first thing Twitter does is say, damn, Montreal is taking on more money for no reason. Man, shut up, okay? You're bringing in a left-handed defenseman, which A, Montreal needs, okay? Is there a better way that Montreal can probably spend that $4 million that they just acquired? Absolutely. But we all know that Marc Bergevin is not doing it. He's patching holes here. He's not rebuilding, right? He's not using the term. He will not mortgage the future for a quick fix now. So he's just putting patches everywhere, and he's patching the defenseman. Scandella's a left-handed defenseman. That's a need for the Habs. Right now, they need somebody. So they go out and they get what they need. He can probably play the top four. Okay. So you got Weber, Sherratt, Petrie, and Scandella. You can probably get Sherratt off the Weber pairing. You can probably play Scandella with Weber, actually. But a guy like Kulak's probably the guy who moves out. I would like to see Sherratt move out of there as well, put Victor Mete back with Weber. Anyways, blah, 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 it doesn't matter. he's going to do two things here. So he can give you some minutes, okay, and he can help on the penalty kill because Montreal has a garbage penalty kill, and they need help. So he fits a need here. The good news is as well, you don't need to keep him. He's a UFA at the end of the year. You decide what you do with him there. It's a nice audition for him to say, hey, maybe I'd like to stay here. Let me play well. He's not going to come in here and score a whole bunch of goals and rack up a whole bunch of points. That is not his job. His job is to add some stability to that blue line. Is he going to make another $4 million? I don't know. But it's kind of a nice problem to have at the end of the year. He's got 9 points, okay? Here's the thing, though, that's a little bit interesting for me. He's got 9 points in 31 games. He's a +9 on a garbage team. He's played 31 games. He's got 8 penalty minutes. So he's not going to hurt your team very much. And, I mean, honestly, that's nice. It's nice that he can come in here and play the role that needs to be played. The Montreal Canadiens need to be better on the penalty kill. He's going to help that. They needed a left-handed defenseman. They got them. It's a perfect quick fix to a problem. Perfect. And you didn't give up anything. What did you give up to acquire him? A fourth-round pick that was originally San Jose's. And then Buffalo says, perfect. Let me use that pick that I've just acquired. And I'm going to send it to Calgary so we could pick up Mikael Frolik. So you basically... I mean, his contract, he's got 4.3 on the books. All right. So your salary cap, basically you've taken on net 300,000. Same thing. Player coming in. He's a UFA at the end of the year. You don't have to keep him. And Buffalo needs some help, by the way. This is a team that's down Jeff Skinner. They're falling farther and farther out of a playoff race because they are just losing games out of control. Jack Eichel and, I mean, their top line, Eichel, Olofsson, and Reinhardt's the only line that makes any sense right now. So you're going to bring in a guy who is, I mean, let's be honest, it hasn't really been a great year for Frolik in Calgary, which is surprising because Calgary needs some help. Like, this is a team that needs some depth on that right side. And here they are just, you know, giving him away. Gone. Boom. Done. Giving away a player who apparently can't find a home on that side. All right. Look, man, he's got 10 points. He's a minus 10 on a team that's, you know, it's all right. But anyways, change of scenery. He's going to Buffalo. Good. He's going to have an opportunity to do something should he need to. Can he slot into the top six? Probably. He's a top nine forward, that's for sure. So it's going to be good for him. I think Buffalo still believes that they can make... This is the number one thing, though, right? Montreal and Buffalo still believe that they can be a playoff team because they're getting out here and they're getting things done. None of these two moves really scream, you know, oh my God, look out, these teams are going to make the playoffs. But it's telling your team, hey, we got something to do. We have an opportunity to get things done. We're going to do it. Montreal gets some stability on the blue line, which they need. They get some stability on the penalty kill, which they desperately need. And Calgary here moves $4.3 million off the books. Which, again, maybe this is something they need to do so that they can get something else done. I really do believe that this is a team that can compete in the Pacific Division for a playoff spot. So, I mean, look. And like I said, kind of ironic that this team is moving a winger when you consider that Milan Lucic is on this team, Tobias Reeder is on this team, Zach Ronaldo's on this team, and these guys are playing regularly. Like even Ronaldo's seeing a decent amount of time in the game. And, you know, Dylan Dubé's come out a little bit. He's taking on a spot there. And I don't know, man, just... I guess it's one of those things where they shed contract and you say, well, maybe we'll get something else after that. Or I don't know. There's probably another move coming here for Calgary. They didn't have a fourth-round pick this year, so they get that back from San Jose. So maybe that's just the key that they wanted to go with here. I don't know. I don't know why Calgary's moving on from money. But anyways, it happens. Good for Frolik. Is Frolik fantasy relevant? No. Mike Riley's not fantasy relevant. Marco Scandella, probably not as well. If you're in a deep, deep format, I'm talking 16, 18 teams. Scandella probably blocks shots as well. If your team counts that, fine. Frolik, the same thing. Depending on where he slots into the lineup, I want to see where he plays first, who he's playing with, before I even get the idea of saying, okay, maybe I'll add him to my fantasy team. But like, just forget this. This is more of Montreal doing what they needed to do to get something done. Perfect. Now, let's look at the real question here afterwards. Because today, as I'm sitting there, you know, saying, man, what am I going to, you know, I know what I want to talk about now. But what about, boom, I lift my head up and all of a sudden, Ilya Kovalchuk is a member of the Montreal Canadiens. And my first thought was, holy, I can't believe that just happened. Like, this is a player who couldn't make it work. Like, he was one of the best players out of that 2001 draft. Like, when I remember when I was a kid, all the talk was, were they going to be able to acquire Atlanta's first overall pick? The trade back then, I remember it, was Mathieu Garon, Andrei Markov, and the seventh overall pick. That seventh overall pick became Mike Komisarek. Now, looking back on it, hindsight is perfect. I don't think, you know, it made sense for Atlanta not to take that deal because, I mean, Kovalchuk ended up being one of the best, I mean, wingers of his generation. He was absolutely just rock solid, right? So, I mean, good for them. Here's where we go through with this, okay? This is a player who had a lot of success in the NHL. He signs in LA last year, has a decent season, and then the wheels on the bus fall off this year. He has 9 points in 17 games. Not terrible, right? But it just wasn't working for him in LA. He's a healthy scratch. Team basically came out and said, look, man, like, you're not going to play. We'll terminate your contract if you want. Go back home. And it's kind of ironic that, you know, the LA Kings are rolling all kinds of garbage in their lineup and Ilya Kovalchuk can't find a spot there. And when he was originally let go, right, everybody's like, oh, yeah, like, Montreal should take a stab at him. Of course not, right? Mark Bergevin said, well, we're not interested. And, you know, Kovalchuk's agent probably went around. There were some rumors about Boston. I mean, is that a fit? Maybe, but Boston doesn't need anybody. Now, fast forward a couple of weeks to today. Montreal is missing basically four of their top nine players, right? Brendan Gallagher's out with a concussion. Who knows how long that takes? Drouin's still not healthy. Yoel Armia is still out of the lineup. And apparently Paul Byron's a top nine forward. Anyways, this is brought, and if you follow me on Twitter, okay, you know this, how much I despise Jordan Wheel and Nick Cousins because they're seeing regular power play time. Like, Nick Cousins. Jordan Wheel was on the top line with the no in Tatar yesterday. He played, I think it was Wheel. I'm just going to make sure. I need to get, before I say garbage, I'm pretty sure it was Wheel. Because now Daily Faceoff has Cousins playing on the top line with Dano and Tatar. Which, again, it doesn't really matter which one of these idiots is there. They are both garbage. I don't know why you would have both of them. But, look, this is where we are. Yes, I'm sorry. Nick Cousins yesterday was on the top line, not Jordan Wheel. My apologies, Jordan, but wait, your turn's next. Nick Cousins yesterday in their game against Tampa Bay, he had seen the most ice time after two periods of any Montreal forward. 13 minutes. He played 13 minutes in two periods, the most of any forward. And my mind was about to explode here because he is... I mean, he's not a terrible player, but holy crap, man. Like, he's barely a top 12 forward on any other team not dealing with serious injuries. With the exception of Montreal, Columbus, and Pittsburgh. Like, he's probably in and out of the lineup as a healthy scratch. Same thing with Jordan Wheel. And here these two are getting regular top power play minutes. Regularly. And my mind just falls off a cliff when I see this. Because there is no reason for those players to be seeing top power play minutes on any NHL team. None. As everybody already knows, I don't see the point in balancing out your top power play units. There is no reason to have two units. You have one unit and you have a second one. The first one does most of the heavy lifting and all the work. The second one is just there for the last 30 seconds when your players are exhausted and you haven't scored. If your second unit gets on the power play, it's because your first one didn't do the job. That's the only reason. I do not see a need in having two units, okay? Let's go through some teams just for shits and giggles here, okay? I'm going to take the first top four teams on the power play right now. The top power play team operating at 30% is the Edmonton Oilers. Now, the Edmonton Oilers do a lot of good things. Like your first unit, here is their first, again, all according to Daily Faceoff, they're as up to date as humanly possible. This one was as of up to date as yesterday. Probably hasn't changed much. Okay. Here is Edmonton's top unit. Leon Draisaitl, Connor McDavid, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Oscar Klefbom, James Neal. Perfect. That's your first unit. I'm now going to name their second unit. Sam Gagne, Darnell Nurse, Ethan Bear, Jujhar Khaira, Joakim Nygaard. Of maybe Darnell Nurse and Sam Gagne, the regular average NHL fan has no idea who those other three players are. But your first unit is put together of your best players, your best five players. And to a certain extent, I agree. Those are their five best players. James Neal is having a career year because he's playing with the best players. Obviously, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are on a whole other different level. But your five best players play together. Simple. They're operating at 30% on the power play. And okay, well, that's the Oilers. Okay, let's take a look at the second best power play team. Oh, wait, it's the Tampa Bay Lightning. Perfect. Let's go see what Tampa Bay's top power play unit is. Well, look at this. Braden Point, Nikita Kucherov, Victor Hedman, Steven Stamkos, Alex Killorn. By the way, coming into last night, Alex Killorn was leading the team in goals. So before you discredit him, he's doing his part. Those are your five best players. Now, your second unit is not terrible. Palat, Tyler Johnson, Patrick Maroon, Sergachev, Shattenkirk. Fine. They're okay. But can we agree that that top power play unit is hella good? And by no miracle, like, it shouldn't mind blow anybody that your top unit made up of your five best players is, you know, is carrying your team. Your power play is elite because of five good players. Wow. I know. Absolutely shocking here. People are falling off their chairs. Let's go to the third team with the third best power play in NHL. Boston. Boston has the third best power play in the league. I know. Shocking to absolutely no one. Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, Torrey Krug, David Pasternak, Danton Heinen. Okay. With the exception of Heinen, who, again, you could probably put Krejci there, DeBrusque, Coyle, whatnot. Anyways, if you want, Danton Heinen can be your Jordan Wheel, I guess. But even he's better than that. That power play, still, their second unit, decent. Still very good. Not going to take anything away from Coyle, Krejci, and DeBrusque. Good players. They could all probably fit in there. But your first unit is, again, above and beyond. Much better than the second unit, okay? So now there's three of them. Here's a fourth one. We're going to go. Vancouver has the fourth best power play in the NHL. The fourth. They're the fourth best power play in the NHL. My God. What could that first unit look like? JT Miller, Bo Horvat, Brock Besser, Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes. That's your first unit. Wow, I'm not surprised they're doing well. Who's the second unit, you might ask? Antoine Roussel, Adam Gaudette, Jake Virtanen, Tanner Pearson, Tyler Myers. Wow. Oh, man. Like, Jake Virtanen's having a better season. Antoine Roussel is who he is. Adam Gaudette's Jordan Wheel or Nick Cousins. Tanner Pearson's doing all right. He's had a really good month of December. And Tyler Myers. Again, your first unit, way better than your second unit. Now, that's four teams. I could keep going on here as long as possible. The fifth team is Toronto, and they might be the exception to the rule here because Toronto has so many good players. It's hard to fit four on the top unit. But even at that, okay? Even at that, Toronto's got the fourth best. Tavares, Nylander, Marner, Barry, Matthews. Whew. Like, Morgan Rielly could be there. Zach Hyman could be there. I'm going to give him credit. He's done well. that's your top unit. Are they trying to balance this out? No. Of course not. You want one unit that does all the damage. The rest of them, it doesn't matter. It doesn't. Now, I know what you're going to say. Well, Montreal is the ninth best power play in the league. Good for you. Okay? Look, man, a broken clock is right twice a day. They are. Broken clock is right as much as humanly possible. Okay? I just don't understand how that happens. I don't understand why Claude Julien has an obsession with putting Wheel and Cousins on the top unit. But anyways, again, another day. So I named you the top five teams on the power play in the league and how their power plays are top heavy on their first unit. So let's get back to the original thought here, which is Kovalchuk. Now, he's coming into Montreal, and Bergevin made this real simple, right? There's not a lot of risk here, obviously. Everybody's saying that. Low risk, high reward. Fine. I get that. I would have much rather see young players get a chance in the top six, right? Ryan Poehling, Nick Suzuki. Understand that. Okay, fine. You have an opportunity to go get a player who can score goals. It didn't work out with him in LA, which, again, shocking that it didn't work out in LA, but is it going to work out in Montreal? Who knows? LA does not play. LA is, by the way, garbage team this year. Surprise nobody. The style of play that they play in the Western Conference and on that team is night and day between what Montreal does and the Eastern Conference. So, I mean, Kovalchuk played his entire career in the East. He went to the West. He struggled a little bit. The team is not the same. They're not built the same way. He's coming to a Montreal Canadiens team that takes a ton of shots per game. No team takes more shots on goal in the NHL than the Montreal Canadiens. They're averaging 35.5 shots on goal per game. So this is a team that shoots a lot, and you're bringing in a player who can score goals and who has a good shot. He's 36 years old, okay? And Bergevin was clear in his press conference. He's not the player he used to be. The knock on Kovalchuk, obviously, is his attitude sometimes. And that's fine. But I'm Bergevin did his homework. He asked, guys like Nate Thompson. He spoke to guys like Rob Blake as well. Like, he's a hard worker. Guys who are elite and who score goals want to score goals. Like, they don't want to play on the fourth line. They want some minutes, and they want to do something. Now, two things can happen here with Ilya Kovalchuk. He can become the Alexander Semin experience, which that didn't work out very well. Or, in best case scenario, he becomes James Neal. I mean, James Neal can score. I know McDavid and Draisaitl have a lot to do with that, okay? But if he can give you half of whatever James Neal is giving you, that's still pretty good. He did play in the NHL this year. I think, and I'm pretty sure Kovalchuk, maybe he didn't get the offers he thought he would somewhere else. The Montreal Canadiens came back knocking. The opportunity is there. I'm sure Bergevin spoke to his agent and to Kovalchuk about it. And like he said, it's up to the player, for him to, that's the challenge now. It's up to Kovalchuk if he wants this to work or not. The monetary risk is not there. It's $700,000 until the end of the season. He didn't have to mortgage the future. And it's a two-way deal, so he can play in the AHL as well. So for Kovalchuk, At first I sat on this and I was like, man, why? And then I sat on it a little bit more and I said, all right, I want to buy into this. I want to buy into the success. I want to buy into Kovalchuk having a good and second half of the season. Hasn't played 41 games. He's working out his visa. Who knows in what shape he is, blah, blah, blah. And, Bergevin was candid. He has no idea if he's going to succeed. He has no idea in what game shape he's in. But look, man, he needs to do something. So he goes out and he gets Scandella. He brings in Ilya Kovalchuk. At worst, he's telling his team, look, I'm giving you some things to help make you better. Can Kovalchuk play the power play? Absolutely. And there is room for him on the power play. Don't worry. Now it's up to Claude Julien to figure this out. It's up to him to figure this out. But there's room for him to play with guys like Nick Suzuki, who's been feeding Tatar absolute bombs and, cross ice from one side to the other and scoring goals. So there's an opportunity for something to go on there. It's going to come at the expense of some forward. I hope it's Dale Weiss. Man, I like Dale Weiss. I do. But he's an AHLer right now. I don't want Ryan Poehling to go back down to the NHL. I don't want Vedemo to go back down to the AHL. These are guys who could stick here. Do I want them playing on the fourth line? Probably not. But look, this is what's going to happen. I think there's room for Kovalchuk over the, depending on when he's ready to play, to slot into that top six. Maybe not slide in there with Danault and Tatar. Maybe not. Maybe, you know what, I'll give Nick Suzuki that task. Or you know what, please, by all means, just put, I would feel more comfortable if it's a Turi Lehkonen on that top line. Switch him onto the other side. I don't think Lehkonen's a top line winger, but I would much rather see Max Domi, Nick Suzuki, and Ilya Kovalchuk on the same line. Oh, man. That could be nice. That line's not going to be very well, their defensive game might suffer, but I would like to see Nick Suzuki sending cross-ice bombs to Ilya Kovalchuk and him one-timing it top cheese. I would love to see that. If you don't want to do that, I would move Ryan Poehling up. I'd give him a chance on the wing. You can play Kotkaniemi on in the center, Kovalchuk on one side, Nick Suzuki on the other. The key here is I want to see Nick Suzuki and Ilya Kovalchuk play together. I would love to see it with Max Domi as well because Domi is on fire. He can facilitate the puck around. And that's what Kovalchuk needs. Kovalchuk is the finisher. He's got elite skill. Guys who score goals know how to score goals. His skating may have gone down a little bit. His finish may not be the same. He's older. Everybody knows this. The team also knows this. He's not the same player he was. But guys who score goals can score goals. They know where to be, and they know how to do it. And if this experiment's going to work, you're not going to bury him on the fourth line with Nate Thompson, because that's not going to work. Because if not, you're going to get the LA, you're going to get whatever experiment was going on with the LA Kings here. And it was not good. And at worst, it doesn't work out. The book doesn't hit you. You know, you can send him to the AHL. You can terminate his contract. Doesn't count against your salary cap. Everybody wins. Kovalchuk can make it continue, take the next flight out of Montreal back to Russia. I do, you know, he came here, so I think he sees the opportunity as well. I don't think he just grabbed whatever was available. I'm sure Montreal told him, look, man, there's a spot for you here. If you want it, just show us you've earned it. And he's, you know, everybody talks about his work ethic. Everybody talks about a player, you know, he wants to. He works out. He does all these things. Fine. Those, you know, I expect those answers. But for Mark Bergevin to say, okay, I'll do it, because now you're bringing in a player with that type of character. You're also bringing in a player with that kind of statue. You know, this isn't a nobody. This is an Ilya Kovalchuk who has scored goals at this level. And if he can work well with some of the rookies around and if he can pass on some of that shooting wisdom that he's got, man, all for it. But I want to see him play in the top six. I want to see him on the power play. Give him whatever you're giving Nick Cousins and Jordan Wheel. Give him that opportunity. And if it doesn't work, fine. Doesn't work. But you have to try. You have to. Because this power play is going to sink. If not, it's not going to go well. And their penalty kill is so bad that you can't have the power play sinking. The power play is just keeping you there. They're slowly falling out of the playoff race. So you got to find a way to just keep your head above water until all the injuries start to get healthy. Until Jonathan Drouin is ready to come back. Until Brendan Gallagher is ready to come back. Until Joel Armia is ready to come back. Even Paul Byron. Like, I know that some people think he's a top knifer. He scored 20 goals last season, so I'll give him some credit where he needs it. He probably makes your team better. He can play on the penalty kill as well and score goal, you know, and score some goals from there. So, fine. I'll give him that. And if Kovalchuk can find a home there, then you know what? It's a good problem to have when you have too many good players on your team. And then maybe we can send Nick Cousins, Jordan Wheel, make them healthy scratch. And if that means you're sending, you know, Vedemo back to the AHL, you're sending Poehling back to the NHL, fine. If that means you're going to send Suzuki to the NHL, I don't like it. But hey, the option is still there if it needs to happen. I like I said, I wasn't hot at the idea first, but I understand the need. And like Bergevin said, things happened, injuries happened. He circled back and he said, all right, look, here's what we can offer you. And now it's up to Kovalchuk to take advantage of it and everything. Who knows when he shows up? Is Kovalchuk fantasy relevant? No, not right now. I want to see him play first. And I want to see how Claude Julien is going to use him. So like I said, if he's burying him on the fourth line, screw it. I don't care. Like, he's not going to last 10 games. It's going to be like, okay, put me on a plane back to Russia. That's it. And, you know, ironically, this is not a team filled with a whole lot of Russians anymore. So, again, it's been a while since Bergevin's gone out to get a pure goal scorer. This is a sniper, right? Like an Alex Kovalev type of player. And whatever Kovalchuk can give you is a bonus. You got him for free. It cost you nothing. He's the upside. Everything he does is upside. If he can fit in with this team, if he can play the quick style of hockey that Montreal Canadiens like to play, and if he gets his opportunity to score goals, I think he can do it. But you got to give it to him. You got to keep this player motivated. If he says the motivation is there, fine. Give him a little bit. Give him whatever you're giving Nick Cousins and Jordan Wheel. I do not want to see Kovalchuk not getting power play time and Nick Cousins and Jordan Wheel on the top unit, because I am going to lose it. I am going to pull all my hair out of my head and go on a rampage. And at that point, just fire Claude Julien to the sun. Fire him as far away from this planet possible. Just fire him. That's it. Simple as that. But I'm excited to see how this goes. And I hope, I just hope this goes well. I know, you know, Kovalchuk may not return next year. That's fine. I don't think, you know, this is a summer fling, man. And this could be the greatest summer ever, or this can be one that you look back and you're like, why did I do this? But I'm hoping this is one, that summer fling, that you look back and you're like, man, remember that time Ilya Kovalchuk was a Montreal Canadian for half a season? And then you talk about it, you know, good times kind of thing. Not, remember that time, you know, Bergevin did that stupid thing and he went out and signed Kovalchuk? Like, that's not what we want here. We don't want that. I want him to be at least a bright spot for this team. I really am. And, that's it. That's enough ranting for today, I think. That's it. Before I let you go, I just want to mention that, right, 2020 is going to be a big year for the podcast. There's so many things I want to do. There's so many things I want to get done as well. And, you know, sponsor, I haven't been able to find a sponsor for the podcast. So I figured I was going to start a Patreon account for Slapshot Podcast. So if you don't know what Patreon is, basically it's a subscriber platform where you can subscribe, and sometimes there's content that people put. Basically, it's to help, you know, support publishers and whatnot. So I set up a Patreon account. If you love the podcast and you want to support it, and you want to support it monthly and whatnot, $5 a month is all I'm asking. If you want to support it, just sign up. You can cancel at any time. You can decide to do it for 1 month. You can decide to do it all year. I'm hoping that I'll be able to get a couple of, you know, supporters on there. I'll have the link posted in at the bottom of the description of wherever you're listening to this. If you sign up and you just want to support the podcast, thank you in advance. I know people like listening to it. You know, every week there's more and more people listening to it. I like doing it. And like I said, I want to take it somewhere. I want to make it bigger, man. I want to do a couple of more things. And I know financially sometimes those cost a couple of things. And like I said, I'm not looking to get rich here. I'm not going to quit my daytime job. If I have one person support me, that's more than, you know, that's more than zero. And that's it. So it's just follow the link at the bottom or go to patreon.com/slapshotpodcast and you can sign up and support the podcast for just $5 a month. That's all it is. I'm not going to ask for more. I don't need more. If you want to contribute more, fine, but like, don't need that. Like I said, I'm not looking to get rich here with this. It's so I can do a couple of things. I want, you know, to have some guests come on this year. I want to be able to do something for the podcast. I want to be able to do some giveaways, some contests. I want to do all kinds of things. Like, I want to thank the people who keep listening to the podcast and keep supporting it. So if you want to support the podcast, just follow the link at the bottom of this and sign up. And like I said, there's no obligation for you to do it for the rest of your life. There's no obligation for you to do it for the entire year. But if you love the podcast and you want to support it, by all means, thank you in advance. And I promise I'll make it worth your while. You can always follow the podcast for free if you want on Twitter at Slapshot Podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at FuzzyChris91. You can obviously get this podcast on Spotify. It's on YouTube as well. You can get it on Stitcher. You can get it on Podbean. You can get it on iTunes as well in the Apple Podcast section. There's so many great places you like it. If you want something, if you want me to cover something specific on the podcast, you can always slide into the DM. You can always tweet me. Send me a message. Send me what you like, what you don't like. Again, it doesn't matter if you hate it. That's fine. I mean, I just like, you know, like I said, it warms my heart that people listen to it. That's all that I can really ask for here. So again, thank you for joining me. And I should be able to return to it on regular schedule as of Wednesday. I think so. There's probably going to be some stuff that's going to happen in the NHL. And yeah, so like I said, support the podcast, patreon.com/slapshotpodcast. Follow it on Twitter @slapshotpodcast. And we will see each other. We will listen to each other next week. Okay. Bye.